Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear whistleblower Sibel Edmonds, who has been gagged and classified by the U.S. government, share her story as a translator at the FBI and what she learned there about who's behind terrorism. And what you're about to hear comes from an April 2016 interview with the radio show host Tom Woods. It's episode 629. And you can find it at his website, tomwoods.com. I've edited parts of it here to fit into a 30-minute show. Sibel Edmonds is editor and publisher of Boiling Frogs Post. She's founder and president of the National Whistleblowers Coalition, and she's also behind a new effort at independent media called NewsBud, which you can learn more about at her website, boilingfrogspost.com. And here she is, Sibel Edmonds.
I began my work with the FBI 4 days after September 11, 2001, after the September 11 terrorist attacks, and I served two functions for the FBI's Washington field office, both as language specialist translator for three languages, but also that's Turkish, Farsi, and Azerbaijani. But I also performed analysis because of my background, political background, and knowledge of these countries that were the targets of certain investigations or the operatives from these nations. And that would be Iran and Turkey and several countries within Central Asia and Caucasus, including Azerbaijan, because they also speak various dialects of Turkish language. They are Turkic root languages. And let me just say that I never planned working for the government. I never wanted to work for the government, not only here, but anywhere else in the world. I grew up skeptical of governments, big governments. My father was a known surgeon in Iran. He was taken in and tortured for the kinds of books he was reading and handing out to people. I went through a military coup in Turkey in 1981, implemented by NATO and the United States. And we went through all the martial laws and the curfew. So I have lived in many countries to have this pretty good, strong desire to stay away from the government. The only reason I accepted the job offer, and they basically called and begged me because they said, our country, our nation needs you, Ms. Edmonds. We have had this attack and we are still under attack. There may be more attacks. And with you, we get 3-4 languages covered, plus your background and your analytical skills. I have a bachelor's degree. I have two of them in criminal psychology and criminal justice. I also have a master's degree in public policy. So all those kind of were, I guess, attractive to them. And I couldn't say no, because I was just like any other Americans out there. Well, they're telling me this is my chance to serve my country, and really my country, because other countries I lived in, I was either born in them or I lived them because my parents went from one country to another country for my dad's work. They were not by choice my country. The United States, I came here in 1988. I decided, consciously made a decision to become a citizen. So this is my first and only country by country of choice. And I became a citizen by choice, not because I was born into it. So I said, sure. And I was pretty naive. I was very green. I was similar to many Americans that I get to see or hear from. I totally believe what I was given through my education in the United States, master's in public policy. I love the fact that I was living in a country with separation of powers and constitution, bill of rights, the system of checks and balances. Little I knew. I had no idea that these were illusions that were being marketed and sold to the public through the education, academics, and the mainstream media, and of course, Hollywood. So I was one of the believers. I was very green. I believed that they didn't exist only in theory, but that they, in fact, applied. Well, as soon as I started working at the FBI, I came across some major cover-ups on extremely important investigations, not by choice by the agents, but because of the higher-ups in the State Department and people within the CIA, basically hindering the investigations taken by the FBI. In addition to that, I also witnessed incredible level of waste, fraud, abuse. I mean, things that if they were to really put it out there, and it should be out there, and I'm sure many people have tried to put it out there, and it's out there, that what the government does with people's trust and the tax dollars that they are cutting and collecting every month from their paychecks. And to me, that was an eye-opener, not only the cover-ups, but how these agencies were ran. And being an outsider, I was working for them as a contractor and someone who has always believed in the free market and efficiency. My husband and I, we've been married for 25 years. We have had our own business. It was surreal, the level of intentional waste, fraud, and abuse. And with the cover-ups and issues being significant, I tried to bring some of these issues to the attention of higher-ups within the FBI. Well, that was a major mistake because the problem actually was stemming from those higher-ups, the executive-level people. And that began a chain of reaction and retaliation. And then at that point, I said, well, based on what I studied, what I have a master's degree on, there are channels I can pursue. Yeah, I didn't go out there to media and leak documents. I believe there were appropriate channels, so it's my duty to take it to the Inspector General's office and have them look into these issues and do something about it. Well, the Inspector General's office for the FBI, DOJ, they work for the same bosses. So basically, you're going to the same people and asking them to investigate themselves. But hey, they said this is one of the so-called channels. I pursued it. That brought more retaliation. In fact, half a dozen or more agents stormed our house.
Here she's asked, what sort of information had she reported?
In some cases, there were significant, important facts related to counterintelligence investigations by the FBI that were stopped from being pursued via State Department and the CIA. Because the targets of those investigations actually had other working and operative relationship with individuals within the CIA and the State Department. So whether they were notorious criminals, let's say in movement of heroin into the United States from Afghanistan via Turkey and then Belgium, NATO's headquarters, and from there directly into the United States, or terrorism activities sponsored, strategically designed here in Chicago, in the United States, and then with the players being sent to areas in Central Asia, Caucasus, Middle East to execute terror attacks. These people didn't work for Al-Qaeda. They worked together with the CIA and a certain Pentagon units. These were the issues that would not be within the scope of what the FBI agreed, and you could not investigate and do anything about really true investigation of 9/11 without linking and getting linked to players within the United States, and on top of that chain, dealing with the CIA operations and certain Pentagon, joint Pentagon NATO operations overseas that were being handled from the United States. I know it sounds complex. I have received more gag orders than any other person in the history of this country. They invoked the state secrets privilege during John Ashcroft's Justice Department twice in my case. The Justice Department retroactively classified all investigations conducted by the United States Congress in my case. And this is after the United States Congress went publicly on record and they said all my reports and allegations were confirmed by other documents and other witnesses. But the Justice Department said, okay, now they're retroactively classified your results, the investigation results, and we impose gag order on you.
Here she's asked what the gag order prohibits her from saying.
In short, it means violating constitution and separation of powers because you can't have the executive branch, the Justice Department, issue gag order via retroactive classification on the other branch, legislative branch, the United States Congress. They basically said, you investigated, you said this, you're going to destroy all these documents, we are collecting everything in your computer, you cannot even refer to Sybelle Edmonds because under state secrets privilege, which they did via court, because I also went to court in this case, tried to get the case moving in court so I could bring in witnesses and expose all these massive cover-ups and the consequences of those cover-ups and for the public's right to know. So the information, the truth would come out. And none of these were justifiably classified. It was not about some ongoing investigations. It was not anything that in any way could have been considered classified. They didn't want the public to know because that would have caused outrage. It would have exposed government's own illegality. Well, with Congress, even though illegal, this retroactive classification and gag order, they abided by it. And from both parties, I am not allowed to discuss the fact that there has been an ongoing operation and that involves CIA, NATO, and a certain division within Pentagon that implements, creates terror events at home and abroad, whether it's in Central Asia, whether it's by using Chechens, by training and arming them and having them blow up a building inside Russia, whether it is training and directing another group to blow up a certain entity within Turkey, that these operations are not done via what they advertise to be entities such as Al-Qaeda, or in this case, I'm sure it is what they call ISIL or ISIS. When you look at it, these entities, like in 19, my counterintelligence investigations that I was working on with three FBI agents, and these were field level agents, they were good people, these guys. The problem was from the higher ups and the State Department, the CIA. In 1997, for example, we had counterintelligence recording by tapping certain embassies, let's say if it's Turkish embassies, from 1997 records, that had Ayman al-Zawahiri of Al-Qaeda with two very well-known State Department officials, including Mark Grossman, and Prince Bandar meeting in Azerbaijan, in Baku, in an embassy, and on how to bring certain, what they call terrorist groups from Pakistan and from Saudi Arabia into Turkey, give them fake passports and funnel them into the Balkans area, and there for them to have training camps established and opening up mosques, building mosques. Okay, the financing of it partly came from the United States directly, partly from the Saudi Arabia, but also the operation included utilizing the opium grown in Afghanistan region and then processed in Turkey. Turkey is a NATO member, NATO ally country. And then from Turkey being distributed and traveling through Belgium, United Kingdom, and also in the United States. You're looking at terror activities committed by the United States government. You're looking at illegal narcotic operations being actually directed and operated by the by entities within the United States government. And yet, the stories being sold to the public being that there are these boogeymen in Afghanistan and there are these boogeymen Islamists in Saudi Arabia, they are independent actors who have come up together and they are terrorists and they hate the way of life we have here in the United States. And lo and behold, they are attacking our interests around the world and in our country. It basically, everything that we had in the FBI contradicted the story being told from the government, by the government to the media, and by the media being sold to the American public. That would be the summarized version of what it involved. Well, that's why the gag orders, the state secrets privilege, in courts, they came before the judges, the Justice Department and FBI attorneys, and they said, even if she's right, she can't talk about those because everything she knows is classified at the highest level. In fact, we want you, judge, and this was Judge Reggie Walton initially, and then it went to the appellate court and to the Supreme Court, Tom. We want you to declare her birthplace, where I was born, her birth date, the languages she speaks, where she has gone to school, like university degrees, all classified. And the judge approved it. The judge said, and this is the exact sentence he said, during these terror situations, who am I as a judge to disagree with the Justice Department and the FBI if they are telling me this will bolden terror and increase our terror, the threats of terror? Therefore, I'm going to grant. For us, my attorneys and I saying, how could you declare my birth date classified? If a police pulls me aside and says, you were speeding, driver's license, please. What am I going to say? I can't hand you my driver's license because it contains my birth date. It is that Kafkaesque. But the fact that these Kafkaesque authoritarian police state request from the courts sailed through the courts. So you had in federal courts, both at the appellate, later the Supreme Court level, for the judges to agree with it and saying, okay, yes, you can do that. Heck with the First Amendment. Heck with the due process. You can do that. The fact that the Congress can abide by an illegal gag order by the executive branch, well, that happened without any resistance from Senator Grassley, Senator Leahy. There were so many congressional people that they said, okay, if you order us, we'll do it. We're not going to argue with you. That tells you that neither our Bill of Rights nor these notions of checks and balances and the separation of powers really are at work or in practice. And if you were to challenge government's own criminality, whether it's criminal operations or covering up criminal operations, or it's fraud, waste, abuse with consequences borne by the American people, then there is no power above that government. And therefore, our Constitution Bill of Rights is conditional. It will get suspended if you are exposing government wrongdoing, because government is the ultimate power.
Here she's asked if she didn't just violate the gag order.
I have violating the gag order right and left, especially in the past 6-7 years with my book. We got a special order. It's already on the internet. Justice Department saying that they blacked out because I had to submit my manuscript for my book, Classified Woman. It's a nonfiction. So because of the contract I had signed with the FBI Justice Department, I was obligated to submit that to them. They had 1 month to review it and black out anything that was sensitive or classified. Well, they sat on it for 6 months or so, Tom, and they blacked out everything. They told my attorney every single word in that book is classified. She can't publish it. We are not going to release her from this order. She can't publish it. First of all, I went to publishers and I said, because I know I did not put anything that was justifiably classified, because I know what is classified, what is not. And second, this is against Constitution and First Amendment. The publishers, all these major publishers, they said, unless FBI gave its blessing, they were not going to publish, because then the FBI was going to go after them. So I had to hire my own team, my own editor, my own book cover designer, and the fact checker, and get this book produced and self-publish it via Amazon. And this is after the written letter forbidding me, the government forbidding me from publishing. They didn't do anything. Maybe it was this bluff, who's going to blink first? Maybe the government is so used to federal government by issuing the threat for people just backing off. They thought that was going to be the case. Maybe they thought if they were to take me to court, it was going to bring more publicity for the book and the case and the issue. We are not sure exactly the reason, but I guess they knew with the mainstream media under their control, so there won't be any publicity, any reviews of the book in anything mainstream as far as the media is concerned. It would go away. How many Americans are going to know about FBI whistleblower from 14 years ago or at the time 12 years ago? And maybe they were right. But regardless, I guess standing your ground and saying constitutionally they're wrong, you know, morally they're wrong, and I am not going to back off. And it's my right to publish it, and it's the public's right to read it. And I guess if enough Americans were to do that, whether they are government employees or whether they are just ordinary citizens, we wouldn't be in this position we are today. Unfortunately, that is not the case, because whether with the TSA abuses or with the NSA abuses or with the tortures and black sites, since really most people, they do not dare to stand up or challenge or do anything. We are seeing only the escalations of these police state practices, and things every day is getting worse.
And here she's asked that as an FBI translator, how she had access to all of this information.
Well, not only that my work involved in the FBI with these agents, one of or several important ongoing counterintelligence operations that dated back to 1996. And I performed analysis for them because they didn't have any analysts within the FBI or Justice Department who was both language specialist, knowing the language, plus having the political background of these involved nations or players, which my background did. But also after the whistleblower journey began for me, the retaliations, polygraph, confiscating my computers, the court cases, I formed my own National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, and I have about close to 200 whistleblowers from the FBI and the CIA and the DIA and all these intelligence law enforcement agencies. And also, I have worked with people who later retired from the FBI on some of these issues, not only on my case, but on related cases as well. But also the political knowledge that comes with my background includes certain operations that were conducted, you know, directed by the United States, but conducted in places where I lived, including Turkey. And again, in many ways, it's different here in the United States. In a way, we are so isolated. When you are in Europe or in Middle East, you get to see many of these operations and policies actually in action. And even though in some of these, you know, all of these third world countries, everybody recognizes them as authoritarian, you know, under dictatorship, I consider, because having the experiences living in those countries, coming from living in those countries, and here for the past 28 years, that the situation of authoritarianism and police state practices is actually much worse here than it is in the worst dictatorship. And here's why. In those countries, there is no doubt in the minds of the public, okay, that they are living under dictatorship. I mean, you talk to 99% of the people would tell you that they are living under authoritarian police states and that they have no rights and no democracy, all that. It's worse here because here with the illusion, you get most people, the majority, still saying, yeah, things are not perfect, but we are far from being, you know, police state or fascism, etc. And that makes it that much more dangerous here because there is this denial here. There is, and as long as you have denial, you do not have any possibility, any chance for changing things, for throwing things away and building something new, or any kind of standing up because there is that denial factor. In those countries, they have better chance, even though they get influenced by outside big countries, than we do here in the United States because people, they don't want to accept. They are in denial or they are just honestly naive like I used to be, saying that sure, there's some corruption here and there, but we are the best. There is no other country as free as we are. And we do have, and then we celebrate our 4th of July and we eat our hot dogs, we drink beer, we have the firework and we declare ourselves as a nation of free where the fact, where the reality is far from it. Thus, rendering us in a more precarious, dangerous situation than those third world countries with already publicly acknowledged authoritarian regimes.
And now here she's asked about how to get people to believe in what she's saying about who's actually sponsoring the terrorists.
They would say it is impossible. Again, it comes, again, thanks to the mainstream media, maybe resistance by the people to actually even delve into history and context. That is not something new. Operation Gladio began right after World War II, and it is not a conspiracy theory. If you were to go and type it, it was a NATO, US, and UK ran operation that said, okay, in order to counter the communism and Soviet Union, okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to create these false flag terror events in Turkey. And if you go to the list, these are confirmed lists. CIA's FOIA, after 40 years, have already put this information out. You would see these terror incidents in Italy, okay, that was conducted by the U.S. NATO forces, and then that was blamed on some communist faction in Italy or the Soviet Union. You go and look at Bulgaria and you see what happened there. You will go and see in Turkey. So these false flag operations, they're already confirmed. So what happened, Tom, is after the fall of the Soviet Union, that operation started shifting starting in 1995, and that's the counterintelligence operations I was working with the FBI agents in this specific, very contained unit within FBI's Washington field office. Around 1995, 1996, the original Operation Gladio, which I refer to Gladio A, shifted to Gladio B. Now, instead of creating these false synthetic terror events for the long-term objectives of the powers, the Western powers, and blaming it on the communism with the Soviet Union gone, it was going to be blamed on the Islamists. And that was going to pave the way, not only our way into the Middle East, but mostly, and this is again something nobody wants to pay attention or even know about here in this country, with the main targets being Central Asia and Caucasus. Saudi Arabia oil is not going to be here in another 10, 15 years. The long-term objective has been Eurasia. It's been all these natural gas-rich, mineral-rich, oil-rich nations surrounding Russia. Whether you're looking at Kazakhstan or Turkmenistan or Azerbaijan. So, for example, let me give you a quick example to you. In 1997, because my counterintelligence unit also involved a lot of operatives and people from Turkey, Turkish being my primary main language, there was this mullah, this imam, this extremist Islamist guy named Fethullah Gulen, okay? Fethullah Gulen was preaching and wanting to bring Sharia law, and Turkey, even though they had elections, they were still, and they are still, under the military regime since the coup in 1981. So they decided to jail this guy. Mysteriously, Fethullah Gulen got into a Gulfstream jet, CIA-owned, in 1997, and he was brought into Washington, D.C., okay? And worked with the State Department and worked with the State Department's other puppet. And this is the guy they declared the United States State Department, the president in absentia of Turkestan, which is the Xinjiang region in China. So basically they said, this guy is a president. He's the Washington, D.C., but because the objectives also include Xinjiang area, and this is again Turkic faction living in that portion of China, which sits on this very important pipeline for gas and oil. And by 1998, this man, this Imam Mullah from Turkey, Fethullah Gulen, began his NGO organization under moderate Islam here in Washington, D.C. and in Pennsylvania, okay? And right now, if he's still here, okay? If you go and put Fethullah Gulen NGO organization, it will give you the value of this organization in terms of financial power at $22+ billion. He owns the largest charter school groups in the United States. Well, our operatives from the CIA and State Department, under his name, with him, they began establishing more than 350 mosques in places like Azerbaijan and Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. Now, nobody knows where this guy is bringing his $22 billion. Nobody knows about the source of this, which goes to the heroin operation that is conducted by U.S. NATO via their proxy nation, Turkey, through Turkey. Now, those labs to process those poppies moved from Turkey to Azerbaijan. Currently, a lot of those labs are in Azerbaijan, and now they are able to do it in the source, which is Afghanistan, but they couldn't do that 15, 18 years ago. Fethullah Gulen is not a conspiracy theory. People can go. He's a Turkish mullah. He is worth $22 billion. He's the man. If they go and look at the number of mosques, by now it's about 380 plus mosques that we, together with Fethullah Gulen, we, the United States State Department and CIA, have established all over the Central Asia and Caucasus. Some of these mosques, their grounds were used for training Chechens, okay? And getting these Chechen fighters in mid-1990s into Balkan during our Balkan Wars. Some of these Chechens we used to send them into Russia to execute terror attacks. Well, some of these same Chechens now with ISIL, those same Chechens are being sent, have been sent into Syria and in Iraq. If you go and look at the roots of the Chechen terrorism, well, we did it with this mullah. We have been doing it, Mullah Fethullah Gulen, in all this region starting in mid-1990s under Operation Gladio B. And it, the documentation in terms of what this man has been doing, he's like an 82-year-old man. He only went through third grade education. He's has semi-Alzheimer's, okay? He's sitting in this castle in Pennsylvania. It's a major castle, and the compound is protected by all these mercenaries and with helicopter security. And this man owns and operates the largest charter school chain in the United States of America. And he is, as far as the reach is concerned in terms of building mosques and training terrorist grounds, This man is much bigger than entire operations conducted by Saudi Arabia under our guidance. But nobody will talk about that in the U.S. mainstream media, even though the facts for it is out there for everyone to see.
And again, you were just listening to FBI translator and whistleblower Sybelle Edmonds. From an April 2016 interview on the Tom Woods radio show, she has written two books, Classified Woman and Lone Gladio. Her website is boilingfrogspost.com. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.